Good morning and welcome to the Second Cup of Coffee with your hosts, Lax Worm and Coach Bear, bringing lacrosse legends right to your kitchen table. So let's just see what the boys have brewing.
Mike, I didn't hear you.
How's this, better? Guys?
There we go.
Guys?
Welcome to the show.
Again, the technical.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
I was just saying to myself, apparently, I was just saying that I felt like I went through a show prior to even getting on the air here. You guys are already off. It's like you were shot out of a cannon, both of you, so this should be interesting. We have Coach Randy Mearns. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I appreciate you guys having me on, although I might be throwing the metrics off because I'm on my fourth cup of coffee, just so that you know.
Yeah,
so I'm all amped up.
That's all right. We use it. I think it's a factor of two here, so you're right on the mark. So
yeah. That's how the Canadians count, right? Isn't that like Canadian money? We have to like do.
Well, I mean, you got to decide whether you're going to. Right, like, are you getting a small coffee? Is it a double-double? Is it an extra large? I mean, there's just a lot of variables. It's just, you know, we're all addicted to the Tim Hortons up in the motherland, so it just kind of becomes part of it, right?
There you go. We never had anyone really explain the coffee, Bear. That's that's a great kickoff to the second cup of coffee.
That's right.
So, Coach, you got a lot going on. I heard the first show we did, which was before we got on the air. So, it was, you know, tell us about. I was interested when you were talking about Marist and how they're stuck, and then you this whole COVID situation with your schedule. And last week you were supposed to play Canisius, and then last minute you ended up playing Monmouth. Year's been kind of crazy, huh?
You know, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's we're all living in the time of COVID, and you know, I think we all had to try to get through the fall first and foremost, Mike. I mean, you know, and you just kind of, you know, you have your guys, you know, try to remember or rekindle the memory of, you know, March 12th last year when our sports supervisor came on the field during a practice and just said, you know what, season's over, and you guys got 24 hours, and everybody's going home, you know. And just like anything is, you know, we got guys back on campus, and, you know, we just asked them, like, listen, you got to stay to your protocol. Here's the rules, you know, the mask mandates, you know, for our campus, you know, kids couldn't even go visit other kids in the same dorm floor, like to go to a different room. And it was kind of like, in some sense, kind of like living in prison. But we're just like, guys, if we can stay to the protocol, we can continue to get tested, and if we're all negative, we get to practice. And you know, to our guys' credit, like, they just did it. Like, it was great for us while there was a lot of teams in the fall not practicing or small pods, which we started out with. I mean, we had 6 full weeks of practice with our entire team. So kind of felt like we got a ton in. And then all of a sudden, hey, now it's springtime. And just like everybody, okay, when can we start? And what's you know, do the protocols change? And, you know, we're all watching basketball, and, you know, that game got canceled, that game got postponed. So you try to educate your guys on, you know, if we don't stick to the protocol, and, you know, there might be some opportunities where all of a sudden, you know, hey, we're supposed to play, and then all of a sudden it gets postponed, or the opponent changes. And to your point, we went through that last week. We were, you know, getting geared up to play Canisius, and all of a sudden on Wednesday, you know, same type of thing. Sports supervisor came in and just said, you know what, unfortunately there's some issues with Quinnipiac and Marist, and we got to flip the script, and you're going to, you know, the Jersey Shore to go play Monmouth. I'm like, okay. And, you know, but that's just the time of COVID, and we're just grateful that we're playing games and trying to get through this. And, you know, and our guys, again, testament to them, they just stay due diligent to what we're asking. And, you know, because of that, we get to keep on playing and practicing.
Well, we should chat. I mean, it's obviously crazy, but we should chat a little about who you are. Bear doesn't think anyone knows who you are. I think you're a legend. That's why you're on this show. But, you know, Bear likes to think he's the only one that people know. So we're going to have to give you a little background. You're obviously the coach of St. Bonaventure right now. We were talking about your schedule. You were at Canisius. You started Canisius, right?
Well, I didn't start Canisius. I started at Canisius probably way back. I was part of the first recruiting class as a player, matter of fact, yeah. In 1989. And so kind of interesting looking at it as a player, you know, these first 3 years that our guys are going through, like I've actually experienced as actually a player, a student athlete, excuse me. And, you know, and that was exciting. And, you know, Coach Van Tine, who was our head coach back in the day, you know, just tried to build a foundation. And I know it's important for our group as it was for me. I mean, all the guys that were in my wedding party, guys that are the godfather of my kids and guys that you hang, tend to be more your college guys. And I'm still very, very close with all those guys that were part of that foundation of, you know, building, you know, at Canisius as a player. And, you know, I had about 5 or 6 years off, went back to Canada, played a ton of box lacrosse, and then was fortunate to have the opportunity to take over the program as a head coach in 1998 when Coach Mike Greco decided to focus in on his own children and go back to coaching high school. And you know, for me, it was just, you know, okay, let's just try to continue to, like, build the Canisius brand and the Canisius program. And, you know, that lasted for about 19 years until this next opportunity presented itself.
We also should say that, you know, I skipped over the Canadian Lacrosse Hall of Fame. You were 2006, 2014 world champions. So, you know, we were chatting earlier, and, you know, you said legends, and you could tell you what you consider the legends, but, you know, I doesn't this qualify? I mean, you got a pretty good credentials here.
Well, as Bear was saying, you know, and as we were chatting before getting on air, it's you know, you end up realizing that you're getting old. You know, I got to be honest with you, I'm going on 52, and, you know, part of my recruiting presentation to the kids at St. Bonaventure is like, God, like, I'm getting closer to 100, and that sucks. You know what I mean? Like, we're running out of time, you know, and we still got all these, you know, ideas and dreams and goals, and, you know, you try to encapsulate and still have that energy and, you know, and then you kind of start to realize that, you know, and I stole this actually from another coach at a convention, that, you know, the young guys are just waiting for us old guys just to die, right? So then they can just take our jobs. So but, you know, you do all this stuff and, you know, legend and all that stuff, that's appreciative, that's pretty trippy. But you do it with people, you know, you do it with like-minded guys that are trying to do something pretty amazing. And, you know, when you get to that level and get into that group, you know, you try to find your roles and how can you help the group be successful? You basically give yourself up to the team, to the program. And, I mean, God, you know, I can sit there and look back at my life and, you know, the guys that I've had the opportunity to, you know, win a variety of championships with. I mean, Gary and Paul Gate and Tavares and Jimmy Veldman, the Kilgore brothers, you know, Casey and Ryan Powell. Like, you just kind of go through not only Canadian Native Americans, you know, Dewey Jacobs and Cammy Bomberry and, you know, and then the American guys, Reggie Thurlow. I mean, like, these guys are just tremendous people, and it's a testament because a lot of these guys are all still in the game, still coaching at the highest level, you know, involved in the professional avenue of the sport, the PLL, the NLL, and I just really believe it just takes some goals and some dreams, and then you go to work, and then you go to work at it, and when you start to kind of achieve some success, it's that kind of fire in the belly. Like, you just keep on getting after it. And, you know, it's just, I've just been fortunate and I'm humbled by, you know, just the individuals I've been able to do this thing, this whole journey with. And you know, now I'm excited at St. Bonaventure and got some great assistant coaches and Gil Connors and Nico Capron and Nick Clinton. Our AD is a lacrosse guy. Our senior women's administrator was on Team USA women's national team back in 88. She was an All-American. She's a lacrosse girl. And, you know, at Bonaventure, they just got this focus of really, you know, providing the resources and then, you know, giving, you know, having some time to build, you know, to so we can get to a point where, you know, and Bear is a part of this, building the foundation at Robert Morris. And now all of a sudden they're challenging, you know, Virginia 14-12, you know, but he was part of that foundation. That's what really what we're trying to do, you know, here is to get to a point where, you know, hey, we can actually legitimately vie against the big dogs, you know, the Big Ten and the ACC and become relevant in the sport of men's lacrosse.
You mentioned the litany of names that you mentioned, which is, oh, by the way, our show list over the next course of the next few weeks here. But who is when you look back on that, who made the biggest impression on you that you still think about?
Oh God, there's so many people. I think when you look back, why did I like the game so much? I mean, you start kind of playing. How I got into it was my brother Robbie was a goaltender, pretty amazing individual in his own right. He's a class 7 cerebral palsy, guy. He's got a bad left chicken wing, and so he was a goaltender in box lacrosse, and that's how I kind of got into it, because he was already playing, and I was 7 years his junior, and I got the opportunity to watch him, kind of like live his life, and the trials and tribulations with my parents and with him going through. And back in the day, the 70s and the 80s, there wasn't really any political correctness, and all of a sudden he really focused in on running, and all of a sudden a pretty amazing thing happened in St. Catharines, where I'm from. It's kind of, at that time, was more of a blue collar city, GM and Ford and Thompson Products, and my old man worked in the factory. But all of a sudden my brother he got into running, and he started running all over the city, kind of like Forrest Gump, so to speak. And everybody in my town knew who my brother was. And then it was right at that instant when all of a sudden the Paralympics started to become a thing. And so, he represented Canada, in 5 different world championships, 3 Olympics, being somebody that, was disabled or had limited ability in his left side. And I got to tell you, if I ever bitched and complained about something, he would just look at me saying, what are you complaining about? You got 2 strong arms, 2 strong legs. You got your own goals. Get after it. Mm. And that was a big influence, And then, as specific to from a lacrosse standpoint, when I was a young guy, Jerry Galloway was inspirational for the first 4 or 5 years, because when you're 4 or 5 years old, he made lacrosse fun. Like it was fun to go to the arena, to the outdoor bowl of Port Dalhousie. And then all of a sudden you kind of evolve, and you got Gary Halliwell coached me, in my band in midget years, and then you get to junior, and Jim Brady was the mastermind in St. Catharines and really put the foundation to the junior A athletics, and was the architect that brought Darius and Richie Kilgore and Tyson Lias and Darren Much and Stevie Fennell all on the same team, and really, really stroke the fire in us to try to achieve something that we didn't know we would be able to do, and was basically winning a Minto Cup, in St. Catharines playing junior A lacrosse. Because when we were all growing up, we were all the C, B centers. We weren't the A centers like Whitby, Peterborough. And finally, we got to that point where, wow, all of a sudden we're all together now, and wow, what one hell of a team. And then a weird thing kind of happened, Mike. It was all of a sudden, that was the infancy of the Eagle Lacrosse League, now the National Lacrosse League, which when I got drafted was the MILL. And we had 12 guys from that junior A team play professional lacrosse. Now, we're all making $1.25 back in the day in the early years. So, but at the end of the day, you're playing in front of 16,000 people, and you can see potentially where this game could grow. And now you look, 20, 25 years later, I'm watching ACC lacrosse last night on TV. You're going to be able to watch 19 games this weekend. There's not a time in the springtime, with all the technology that, lacrosse is becoming more and more relevant, and it's incredible. And then obviously with the merge of PLL and the MLL and how that's going to potentially evolve, and the Olympic push, with the FIL World Lacrosse now, and the women's side of the game. I just kind of gather, the kids that we recruit is really trying to understand what their goals and dreams are, and really try to give them a sense of vision that, what's lacrosse going to look like in 7 years from now? Because I don't see it stop growing. And again, so you do all these things, and I feel like I tried to do it for all the right reasons. It was, be a phenomenal teammate, continue to compete, and be part of the growth, of the game itself. And it's just been an amazing ride. And like I say, I'm 52. Hopefully I still got a lot of years like Coach Tierney, and can stay at the forefront of the game.
So Randy, that, I mean, listen, you just explained like so much. There's a lot to swallow what you just said, and it's like so true. And I think even I can't imagine sitting there as a college kid's like, oh, that's all on my shoulders. It's like a lot, right? But you know, it is, and I think we all carry that, right? Every time you pick up a stick, there's like you carry that burden, and it's a good burden. It's not a bad burden at all. It's like you are the future of the game, even if you're 52 and Randy Mearns, or you know, and. I'm looking, you know, and I'm like, yeah, you've mentioned Mento Cup. You mentioned, I mean, you've been in 5-man cups, you know, like, or you won 5-man cups. Maybe you were in more. Yep. And we're sitting here, and I know a lot of our listeners are, you know, they're Americans, and they and the box game is obviously blowing up down here. I don't think people fully that don't know it appreciate what a Mento Cup or a Man Cup, you know, means. Maybe you can, and they don't even know what the makeup is. Like, you know, we think of high school lacrosse around here. Like, everybody lives in the community. They play on their high school team and maybe a couple club, you know, their club programs. But as far as, like, boxing, Canada, and the men, you know, and being in the junior A's and the B's and the C's, like, maybe just a 5-minute explanation of what that is and what that means to, you know, to the Canadians.
Yeah, you know, it's part of what we were with growing up, and again, different time, different era, right? No internet, no social media, nobody's trying to brand themselves, you know, blah 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 blah, and you know, you kind of, you know, you played for your friends, you played for your teammates. Everything was not really in Canada. It wasn't in the high schools. It wasn't like you were playing for your high school team. You played for your town. You played for your city. And, you know, you would, you know, you played your small little local zone, and then you would go to tournaments 4 or 5 times a summer. And then you would go compete against, you know, the Whitbys or the Peterboroughs. And you didn't even know these kids. But over a period of time, you kind of got to know them. But you also got the point of, like, you didn't really like them because you didn't really know who they were. They were just from Peterborough, and they were really good, and you didn't like them. So there was, like, this very, very high compete, so to speak, against the other, you know, other players from different towns and cities. And then as you get to the junior A loop, you know, you kind of go through the minor lacrosse and you get to the junior A loop or the junior B loop. Well, now that's when you start bringing in players from different teams of the local centers to play basically for the all-star team. And, you know, in junior A lacrosse, it's 16 to 21. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough to cut a roster when you're 16, 17, I mean, you're playing against men or, you know, 21-year-olds that have been lifting for 5 or 6 years and you're trying to survive. But you get that, you know, you get that experience. And I remember the first time that I played a junior A game, I was a call-up from midget. I was 16 years old. And I was playing against Joey Neuendijk and Gary Roberts, obviously, you know, NHL Hall of Famers. And, I mean, just the athleticism and the whole bit. So you kind of go through that. And for us, it was always just box lacrosse. You know, there wasn't really a big establishment of field lacrosse at that point. You know, even for the world championships in the 70s and the 80s and relatively speaking, even in the 90s to a certain extent, it was just box lacrosse guys representing Canada to go play field lacrosse. At that time, there was a few guys that had the opportunity to go away. You know, obviously you had the Gates at Syracuse and Tommy Marichuk. I had the opportunity to get recruited to Canisius. And again, different time. Like, no Canadians didn't know how to go get recruited, and you know, there was no social media. Maybe you sent an email, and so you just keep on kind of grinding with it. And then all of a sudden, the NLL, you know, kind of came about, and then you had the opportunity. So you get the NLL, but now all of a sudden, you go to college. So I remember going to Canisius and Coach Van Tine, and God rest his soul, big mentor for me. And you know, but for 3 years, he tried to teach me how to play right-handed, right? I got to do the stick drills. I got to put it in my weak hand and my weak hand and my weak hand. And I would say, Coach, like, I'll try and I'll do it, but in a game, I'm never putting it in my weak hand because I've been doing left-handed lacrosse for 15 years kind of thing. But you know, so you know, I mean, you look at, like, now where, you know, kids that, teams that recruit Canadians, they're not teaching Dyson William to play right-handed. He's a lefty, and that's what we need him to be. You know, there's so much from the box game that you can bring along to the to the field game. And in my reflection, as you kind of get a little bit older and reflect on this, The first time I played field lacrosse in Canada was for this U19 team, and myself and a guy named Mikey Lyons went over to a high school, and there was a bunch of kids playing lacrosse on the field, and we said, hey, well, can we play, and what is it? And it's U19 field lacrosse, great. And as we played in that loop, it was box lacrosse on field. And then, so remember that. That's like mid-80s. And then all of a sudden you go and you do the field lacrosse thing. And now it's the 90s and you learn to try to understand spacing, but it's all alley dodges and slice throughs and never pick the ball. Never, ever do that. Wrong. And as the games evolved, right, of the traditional field lacrosse to now what it looks like today, the game today looks like the game that I played when I was 16 years old on Lakeshore Catholic High School's field, because it was box lacrosse on field with all the different picks and rolls and slip picks and, you know, the whole kind of gamut. So it's interesting to see the cycle of things kind of evolve. The Man Cups, I mean, that's the who's who. That's the next level. Those are the guys that were, you know, all playing in the NLL, and now you're coming back to the motherland in the summertime, and now you're gonna, you know, you're gonna compete for Brampton or Six Nations or Brooklyn, and this is where, you know, it's the men among boys kind of thing, and all of a sudden you find yourself around, you know, like incredible like-minded individuals. I mean, I look at that first team in, you know, the first Man Cup in Brampton. I mean, this is with Jimmy Veltman, John Tavares, Mike and Pat Coyle, Darris Kilgore, Richie Kilgore, Teddy Depp. Like, I mean, it's a who's who of guys that were all-stars and professionals, you know, in the National Lacrosse League, and, you know, had the opportunity to kind of do that for a couple years. And, you know, then we evolved to Six Nations and played on the Six Nations reservation and, you know, started playing with Dewey Jacobs and Cammy Bomberry and the likes of those. And we ended up rattling another three off, and what an amazing experience. But these were the guys that were the guys that were the headliners in the National Lacrosse League during those 90s. From a field standpoint, all of a sudden we get into 2006, and this is true. You know, we're all of a sudden, we're kind of a hybrid. We got some field guys and we got some box guys. We're going to go play the three Powells and Kyle Harrison and University of Western Ontario 2006. We had Colin Doyle. He was a box guy. Sean Williams, he was more of a box guy. But we also did have Brody Merrill, and we had Taylor Ray, and we had Jeff Snyder, and we had Matt Vince. And the best part about it was, is these guys all had the opportunity finally to go to the States and get coached by amazing coaches, right? So we were all of a sudden the recipient as coaches going, we actually have guys that know spacing and we don't have to teach anything and they understand slide packages and blah, 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 blah. And then from that was it now the big rejuvenation of now young guys from Canada that are traditional box guys to try to now get on the recruiting trail to see if they can get recruited down in the States, D1, D2, D3. And now it's, you know, there's not a lot of teams in Division I that don't have one or two Canadians, you know, or three Canadians or Native Americans, more traditional box guys. And so when I look at that, like, I don't think that that's ever going to stop, you know, in terms of those opportunities for the young Canadians that are true. Because from a box standpoint, I always kind of felt, you know, different than a field standpoint. You know, you coach 5-year-old kids box lacrosse. You know, I started doing that when I was 12. And if little Joey misses the pass, it goes off the boards, and then you got to go get a loose ball, and you really only got to run about 3 feet, right? Like, because it's coming back to you. You got to get a ground ball. Where you're trying to teach a 5-year-old, you know, field lacrosse, and little Joey throws it to Sammy. Sammy misses it. Sammy's got to run 40 yards to go get the ball. So I always kind of felt like you got more reps. You couldn't run away. You had to make quicker decisions. And I think that that's where, you know, the offensive side of the ball in NCAA lacrosse has really gotten to. It's amazing to kind of see that influence from box into the field game.
Yeah, Randy, I mean, that's, again, it's awesome reflection on the, you know, what that the Minto Cup, the Man Cup, the Junior A's. And it's like, just trying to understand. I know, you know, when I went to Pittsburgh and took the job at Robert Morris, I was just like, mm-hmm. again, you know, you just do this like draw a 5-hour circle around Pittsburgh. And all of a sudden that Niagara, St. Catherine starts to fall in that area. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go see what's going on here. You know, like, and
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sitting over there. I'm like, well, oh my God.
Oh, and like you're yourself, offense. I mean, you had some really, really good ones. I mean, Kyle Matisse and Kevin Brownell, and I mean, the list just goes longer and longer, and obviously Coach McMinn's kind of evolved and continued to move with that group. But, you know, because, and again, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, as you were building Robert Morris, it's hey, well, where, you know, who's looking for an opportunity that might not be maybe getting recruited by the big dogs at that day? And, hey, can I get them down here? And if I can get enough of them and, you know, counterpart that with some phenomenal, you know, American field lacrosse players, boy, can we, like, build this into something that's real special, you know? And I you know, testament to you, I thought that you did. And that's just part of being that foundation, you know. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here. You know, we kind of feel like we kind of call ourselves, it's kind of weird, but we're like the upstate Canadian Bonnies. You know, we want, it's cold here, so guess what? Getting some kids from Texas and in Florida, yeah. It's tough because all of a sudden they're not used to, hey, it's 27 degrees and we're practicing and it's in snow, right? And so that's where we kind of like set like our recruiting. And as you well know, I mean, it's like you said, like it's a 3 or 4 hour drive where you can go watch these kids play live and really get a true assessment of them.
Well, one of the things you mentioned, which I'm sure, which I thought we found was not only was the skill level incredible, but obviously we had to change our mindset a little bit of like dodge down the alley and do all that stuff because that's not what, you know, what these guys do. But was, you said something very important, and that was the fact that these 16-year-olds were playing with 21-year-olds. And we felt that was the edge, right? Like, how do we bring in a 19-year-old freshman that's already played against guys playing, you know, at the highest levels? So when they walk out and play against a Hofstra or a Towson, I mean, some of the first questions these guys, first of all, most of the guys recruited had no idea who the universities were. They're like, I don't know right. who Towson is. You know, what's Towson? Yeah, you know, who's Towson, coach? You know, like, and hey, coach, if we win, do we go to nationals? Absolutely. That's what we do. You know, it's like, you know, that, right. yeah. And I was like, all right, yeah, that's all you got to do, guys. Just go down there and beat that Towson team and we go to nationals. That's it. So it's just so funny to see how it has evolved, and it's awesome.
And the interesting part about it, as it's kind of evolved now, right, with, you know, you look at the 90s, like you look at the 90s, I mean, you know, the internet was just in its infancy, you know, and like it was just actually in its infancy. And, you know, and everybody was like, I remember Derek Graham, who was living with me in St. Catharines, and, you know, we were playing for the Niagara Falls Gamblers, and all of a sudden he puts up this computer and he's like, hey, I got to go on Yahoo. I'm like, well, what's Yahoo? Well, it's a search engine. Well, what's a search engine? This is 1997. Oh, like there's some stuff on the internet you can kind of go find, right? Now you look at it today, right? 2021. And you know, if you're in any sport, but if you're a young athlete, I mean, you can follow coaches. You're up to speed on who's who and what programs are out there and you know, where might you be a good fit. And so there's just so much more promotion. So I don't know if it's made the recruiting job easier or harder because there's just so many more players, you know, that you're trying to track or that you're trying to, you know, or maybe recruit. And the players are much more attuned and involved in their recruitment process, I feel, nowadays because of social media. And, you know, hey, somebody has a good game, they can just put up their clips because every game gets videoed. You know, here's an interesting thing. I'll throw this one at you. Is this is probably about 3-4 years ago. So the Buffalo Bandits had a Buffalo Bandit alumni reunion, which was awesome, right? And everybody come back down to a game and, you know, down at the Marine Midland, and it's awesome. And what they allowed us to do is they allowed us to actually have like a 15-minute, you know, halftime scrimmage, right? Like, you know, in front of the fans and they weren't going to the beer garden, which is great. You know, old guys, we're just going to go run around. Derek Graham didn't even wear a helmet, kind of funny. You know, old school Eddie Howe stuff, right? And But what we wanted is we wanted to play, and we wanted to look up at the Jumbotron if I scored to see that legit goal that I just scored, right? Because back in the day, like, we didn't even videotape games. Like, players never got copies of games. Like, there's – of the Junior A team, when we won in the Minto Cup, the only game that I've ever seen, you know, like on a VHS tape, was the championship Minto Cup game against Richmond. And so there's no videotape. There's a lot of no videotape of guys watching like Darris Kilgore playing. Like, God, like you know, people know him because he was a Buffalo Bandit coach for, you know, 17 years or thereabouts. But boy, man, like, there's no real video of watching him play. And that's kind of, you know, maybe that's a good thing or a bad thing. It leads to the mystery or the legend. But sometimes I just wish, man, like, no, back in the day, like, these guys were, like, legit. And I'll throw another one. Like, so when Lyle Thompson was at Albany, and all of a sudden Scotty Marr was like, Lyle, I'm going to give you the ball. Because he was just that good, right? We're just going to give you the ball. You do what you do. We'll have some design up top. And then, you know, we're just going to score a ton of goals. And so then Lyle started to kind of go and jab step and go the other way. And, like, you know, and you know what I'm talking about, throwing the wrong-handed backhand top cheese. And people, because it's on social media, people are like, oh, my God, like, holy smokes, did you see that? Like, holy smokes. The thing about it is John Grant did that in the 90s. Darris Kilgore did. Like, but there's no video evidence of it, you know. And Lyle was the one that recreated this amazing stick skill and game awareness that's elevated him to the top of the game, you know. And but it's amazing to, again, just kind of watch that progression, and even for yourself, you know, Bear. I mean, you know, you look at Kyle Matisse, right, captain of the Philadelphia Wings, and Kevin Brown. Like, you recruited these guys, you brought these guys in, and how does it feel where all of a sudden, wow, like, look at where they're playing, look at the level that they're playing at, living out their goals and their dreams, and then in my brain, I'm like, hey, well, what's the salary going to be like in 7 more years with the NLL and how that kind of evolves? There's more money, there's more investment, there's more social media, there's more TV. And boy, can it come to a time in 10 years down the road where a kid that's graduating out of NCAA, Native American because of the U.S. box with Shaden Santos and Brownie, maybe they're just coming out of the Canadian Junior A, Junior B loops, where all of a sudden they come out going, well, you know what, I'm 24 years old, I got a great degree, but I'm just going to, like, live off lacrosse for the next 16 years. You know, I don't know if it ever gets to the millions of dollars, but, you know, there's got to be some cats now that, you know, making the transition of PLL and NLL, where, I don't know, 27 years old, making $150, plus you got your camps, your personal appearances, and your sponsorship. Boy, like, that's living the dream for a lacrosse guy at this point. But what's it going to be in 10 years? You know, but this is the downside to this. I was talking with Rex Lyons about that. And money makes the world go around. And that influence, but if it becomes all about the money and the promotion, you know, do we lose a little bit of the heritage, right? The creator's game, the spiritual side of things, which is, and as we were kind of going through it, and, you know, in our conversation, it's like, what is really the true balance, you know? And we don't know the answer to it. Like, I don't know the answer to it, but I just don't see the game stopping the growth of the game. I don't see it stopping at all.
But don't you think, and it's interesting because you brought up a couple things that I want to hit on. The first thing was the Lyle Thompson comment about how players before him did what he did. And you know, rightly so, but don't you think that's the natural part in the evolution of this sport? You know, you kind of steal from those before you. You know, you start, you see something, you heard something, you play it. But it almost reinvigorates the sport to some degree because, you know, you talk about, I remember watching players, you know, way back, and yeah, I'm seeing the same stuff now with different players, maybe a little bit more flair to it because it's, you know, it is what it is, but essentially the same types of shots and passes. But it reignites the sport for the younger generation.
Absolutely. Right? And this is the best part. And this is the best part for the younger generation. And this is where it kind of comes down into coaching, and there's a balance of coaching. Personally, especially in the development years, you know, kids are, you know, you're 6-7 years old, pick up a stick for the first time, maybe earlier, maybe a little bit later, and you're a coach and you're in practice, and and there's this balance of, hey, do the easy thing and get really good at the easy thing. But then in practice, I'm going to try a hard thing and throw behind the back to that guy. And maybe I miss it. And sometimes I feel coaches like lose their minds on kids, go, no, no, that's not the proper way. Where, you know what, let him try it. Hey, as long as he knows, don't throw that one in a game until you actually can do it. You know, but when are you supposed to practice that? So there's the at practice, and then there's the, you know, everybody that's made it to the next level, to the top of the sport. You know, everybody has put, because they were passionate about the sport, there was something that just irked them inside where, you know, they finished practice. Yeah, you would always be fiddling with your stick. You're always redoing the strings. You'd be out in the backyard. You'd be busting your mom's, you know, garage door windows because you're using them as targets with a tennis ball. And she's going to yell at you, and then your dad's going to have to replace it, and he's pissed off. But at the end of the day, your parents are kind of going, well, at least you're working on your game. I mean, you could be doing a lot of other stupid stuff being a young person, you know, and feel a sense of pride. But you know, anybody that's risen to the level, it doesn't stop when they just leave practice after a two-hour practice. Like, they're already dreaming about it. They're still working on their stick skills. You know, they're going to go get an extra lift. They're going to go get an extra run if they truly want to be at the top of the, you know, at the top of the heap, so to speak, right? And so how do you continue to instill the creativity to the younger generation where maybe throwing a behind the back in a certain moment, you know, maybe isn't the right decision, but at the end of the day, then teach them when they should, and right. Then let them kind of harness some of those crafts, you know, kind of thing. And so for coaches, I think the big thing as well, and I don't know when it changes, is when is lacrosse still all about fun to when now it's all about competing. And nowadays, I think it's all about getting recruited. And I don't know the balance to that.
So let me, I want to take you back again, because I agree. I think, first of all, you know, it was funny. I was coaching the team that I coach, which is 7th, 8th graders right now. And you know, we were talking about creativity. And one of the things that I do in practice is we go kind of a 3-on-3 type of thing at the end. And do what you want to do. Just have some fun. I don't care if you throw behind the back. I don't care if it's between your legs. Have some fun. Be creative. And the kids love it, right? The kids get to, you know, emulate their favorite players in the PLL or in NLL.
Absolutely.
So they have some fun with it. But one of the things you said was the monetary side of lacrosse. And I found that interesting because when we spoke to Orrin Lyons, you know, one of the things that he brought up was the monetary side and how the creator's game is the creator's game. Don't you think, and, you know, I think about this now, I don't think the kids, and I'm saying the kids that I coach and even some that have gone through before, even understand that prospect now. They don't understand the creator's game because it's become a sport. It's become monetized.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, and this is where you try to get them to kind of reflect back. You know, Mike, is what's that thing inside you that makes you want to keep on playing the game or picking up the stick? And what's that thing that just touched you? Like, hey, you have an extension from your hands and you can do this amazing thing that maybe your friends will be in awe of, going, oh my God, like, wow, like you actually just did that? That's incredible. You know, and so there's this extension, there's this thing inside you that just keeps you like, just like loving the sport. Like I want to be involved. I want to, you know, and then you get to a certain point where you get a little long in the tooth and you decide whether or not when do you hang them up? And then when do you start trying to coach the next generation, so to speak? And, you know, when with all the technology and all the social media, again, emulating. Hey, I want to emulate Jordan Wolf. I want to emulate Tommy Schreiber. I want to emulate, you know, Graham Hosack. The question is like to me, depending upon when does it change? When now all of a sudden it's about, for the lack of a better term, getting paid. Right. Get, you know, hey, can I do this that's going to help me get an education? And because of my education, I'm going to have more opportunities further in my life and get that in my back pocket. But if I can rise to the level well, maybe I can get drafted to the PLL and the NLL, and maybe I can, you know, ring that boat and ring that bell and potentially make a living of it, you know? And so I think everybody needs to always kind of reflect back, you know, of the inspiration that the game kind of brought to you. I mean, when I first started way, way back, you know, I mean, you know, I started at four, and I remember being in grade two, and there was a guy named Robbie Berger. He was in my grade two class. And you remember he had to do like show and tell in grade two. I don't know if they do that anymore, but, and he played for Spartans, and he brought in this trophy, and I was the leading goal scorer, and he was just bragging about himself and blah, blah, blah. Cause I was always taught, don't talk about yourself, which is really, really weird with the whole PLL branding stuff, because I'm like, you let other people talk about you. Like, don't talk about yourself. That's how I was brought up. And anyway, but like him being up there, because, you know, he had a fancy for this, you know, little crush on, her name was Trina Kagan, and so did I. And so I knew I was going to be playing him on a Tuesday night, and my mission was to make sure we beat Spartans, and I got like five goals because, like, you know, he bragged about himself, and I, you know, in kind of a sense, like, I wanted to put the kid back in his place, like, well, yeah, but you're not as good as me. You know it, and I know it, so there you go, kind of thing, right? That's just that competitive spirit. So, but what are those things that inspire you to keep on, you know, moving forward? What do we have? What's the game bring? You know, at the end of the day, it brings relationships. It brings relationships with people that have been touched by the sport. You know, and the hard part is again continuing to, you know, foster all those relationships, nurture those relationships, you know, and then we all get busy and we all get kind of doing other things. But this is where, this is the testament to it, is Bear and I can just get on the phone and it's like we haven't missed a beat. But quite honestly, I probably haven't talked to Bear in a year and a half. And we can talk about, hey, when he was running his camps after the World Championships 2006, I came directly to your Robert Morris camp. Remember that, Bear?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that that's, again, we talk about that a lot on this show. It's like the relationships are amazing, you know, and I think that once you always remember who gave you your first stick or when you purchased it or whatever, or introduced you to the game, it's like you'll never be able to repay that person. It's always just about giving a stick forward and knowing what that stick can do or will do for that person is why, you know, what gets you up in the morning, you know, what gets you, you know, thriving. Like, hey, I know this stick can make a difference, you know, not only in my life, but someone else's life, more importantly.
Absolutely. And then coming all the way back. So that's like to me, that's like a spiritual thing. Is that the exact thing where now all of a sudden it kind of starts to get monetized and just like any kind of capitalist society, like, hey, if you're the cream of the crop, we're going to pay for you. But now all of a sudden there's, you know, some competition and, well, you know, and there's been a balance, I think, probably with, I don't know as much about the PLL, obviously, as much as I know about the NLL, but, you know, it's not to that point where it's like the NHL where, hey, they're playing 45 games a year and, wow, this is like the absolute, like, wow, people can just actually do this for a living. And I think the tough part, you know, is I believe it's going to get there. You know, and the question would be, is that a wrong thing, you know, considering the spiritual side of the game, you know, and how do we come to grips with that? I don't know the answer. I think it's going to get there, you know, and whether right or wrong, kids that I recruit, you know, this is the truth. I mean, if they don't tell me they have an aspiration or an inspiration to try to play in the NLL or, you know, the MLL when I was doing that and the PLL now, you know, and if they're not really trying to live to that standard, I basically don't recruit them anymore. You know, because for us to try to do some amazing things and win a national championship here at St. Bonaventure, which nobody thinks that we can do, but, you know, hey, over a period of time, we're going to try to grow this, is you know, I want to get to a point where every year seven of my guys get drafted into the NLL. Like, and if you can do that every year, you can probably vie for national championships. You know, and so that's kind of a strategy of mine. But there's that monetary side to it, where I'm still trying to balance of why are we playing the sport. You know, what's the connection that everybody has? And quite honestly, I haven't done a tremendous job. I haven't done, when I kind of reflect on it, I was like, I got to do a better job of the spirituality of the game and what brings a group of young men together to try to do some pretty amazing things. I mean, it's the game itself, but what's the game mean? And I think we all can probably do a better job of that, to be honest with you. Yep.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I know Coach Burns, I knew, and I told this before we got on air, I said, there's no way we're keeping this in right. within 40 minutes because he's got a 40-minute. We know Coach Burns has a 40-minute. I mean, we didn't get to the world team. We didn't get to the conversation. It's so funny because I look at the draft list from the POL last night and I see Mark Cockerton's yep. left off the list. And I'm like, Randy and I had an hour and a half probably conversation just about Mark Cockerton and the and the Canadian world team and what a special Absolutely. Talent, he is and how what he could bring to the table. And it's just like that there's so many things we could probably tailspin off of
Listen, this we have to have him on again. I'm telling you, interesting stuff, and it was a great conversation, Coach. Listen, I know we've kept you longer than we anticipated, and obviously I could keep you all day because I just am fascinated by your philosophies.
Hey,
there's
not, I appreciate it, and I'd obviously accept an invite to shoot the breeze more because at the end of the day, like this is the best part about it with relationships yeah. and. The old war stories and potentially the future, but like it's just talking about lacrosse. Like it's that this game has meant so much to each one of us on this line and obviously with countless people throughout North America, the world. I mean, shit, like there's 67, 68 nations that are trying to vie to win a world men's championship. The women's side continues to expound, the box side of things continues to evolve, and the women are going to try to, evolve into the whole box side of things. Then the Olympic push, and there's just so much going on. And there's so many people that have shared a vision, although maybe we didn't talk about it, of how do I influence, how do I try to give a great experience to a young student athlete, push their buttons, challenge them, be inspiring to them to live out their goals and their dreams. And then as that kind of evolves, look at all the different opportunities that are, kind of being placed in front of them, so to speak.
Yep.
And are they willing to basically dream big, kind of sit there and say, hey, like there's a star I want to grab. And the only way I can grab it is to do it with my friends and then just have the stones to go grab it. A lot of hard work. It doesn't come easy. You got to put a ton of time into it. We always kind of just back in Canada, I don't know about the States, but the biggest cause for divorce, in Canada is basically, a guy being a lacrosse coach because that's really becomes his mistress, right? So, because he spends so much time on it, right? And sooner or later, Mama Bear goes, okay, you either got to choose one or the other, and, maybe you can convince him for about 20 years, and then sooner or later, they just have enough.
Coach, it's so funny you say that. My wife, we used to have this ritual that, come lacrosse season, I would take her out to dinner, get a nice bottle of wine, a nice meal, and then say goodbye because we wouldn't see each other for a number of months before we got back.
That's so true, man. But the funny thing about it, that's not even a lacrosse story. That's just like life when you get so ingrained in something. But that's my point. We're so passionate about it. Nobody can take it from us, that passion, like anything, you try to instill and that into the next generation and the younger kids, and hopefully they can experience that passion that spiritual side of things that brought us all together.
So, Coach Mearns, we also didn't get to talk about the it looks like a cancellation because I don't see it on your schedule that you won't get to see your alma mater, your Canisius schedule.
That's rescheduled. It's not out there yet, but it'll be rescheduled on Tuesday, April 6th.
Okay, good.
Back at Canisius, Tuesday night at 7. It's a 7 o'clock game. Yeah,
all right.
This is where kind of going through the COVID times. you know, it's, you know, we got to try to find different dates to reschedule after the original schedule. And,
right.
you know, and then you just, you know, try to work it all out. So, yeah, no, that's been rescheduled. So that's
perfect. We'll expect that update on your website then. We'll expect that. And then, but this Saturday, 1 o'clock against QPAC, you guys are going to be on ESPN Plus, 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
so
ESPN Plus, absolutely. Wish you
good luck, Coach.
Good luck.
We really, we'll be watching.
Awesome. Hey, I appreciate the Vine, guys. It's great to shoot the breeze and talk about it, and I really do appreciate it.
We do too, Coach. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Have a good one.
Bear. All I can say is
I just laugh because I just love Randy. He's just awesome. He's just so
I'll
awesome.
Tell you, he's great. Like, the funniest thing was it was
I
like
I told you, I just light the firecracker and it's like bam. I'm like, there's just no. It's a grand finale the whole time you're on the phone with him or on the line. So
awesome. I think that the 4 cups of coffee might have been 8. I think that the factor, I think two went the other way.
It's the Canadian count.
Oh, what a great show. Good
night. It's the Canadian exchange and coffee count. That's right. What we'll call it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Boy, that was fascinating. I love chatting with guys that really are so passionate about it like he is. That's fantastic. All right, Bear.
Well, you know, it's funny you look at that. Like you say, what's he say? 52, 53 years old. And I mean, his energy and passion for the game, you can just feel it, you know, in his voice. Probably if you talk to him at 24, it was exactly the same, you know, which is amazing, you know, like, to me.
No, he's definitely got it. And you know, a lot of the stuff it's so funny. I always walk away from these conversations, you know. You and I have talked about this, that you speak to these guys on the air, and some of it is just kind of, you know, informational, but other things you take the pearls away, right? And how many coaches have we spoken to that have talked about creativity and have talked about you too, but just let the players have some fun, let them go out there and do their thing, and don't be so structured, if you will, all the time, you know? And it's just, you hear that over and over from this top level, from players and coaches. And if any coach that listens in the youth level, that's something that they should take away from these conversations, because it's so important to let the players just kind of run and learn.
Oh, without question. Yesterday it was kind of funny because I do coach the girls here at Hillier Davidson High School, and yesterday we went inside and we were in our field house and we threw the little goals out, you know, at the end of our workout, and did, you know, the 4v4, modified, you know, speed lacrosse that Casey and the rest of the pals have put together there. But it was interesting because it's almost as interesting to see which girl is willing to jump in the goal. Like, what, you know, sometimes, like, what, I don't say who's going to do it, you know, but it, like, it intrigues me. And you find out who the tough girls are. Like yeah. to jump in a goal with no pads on and just say, you know what, I'm going to soak that tennis ball if it comes my way. and I talked to our head coach afterwards. I was like, kind of really interesting to see, like, some of the girls that jumped in there, I would have never guessed. I was like, that they would have jumped in there. And, you know, just to see them trying different things and skill sets in that environment where it's a little more carefree. I'm a firm believer in it. I think it's 100% spot on, you know. This where they're not going to get yelled at for not going to the right spot at the right time. You know, it's just like, just go play, you know, go play. And that has been an ongoing theme with our most experienced, you know, guests on the Second Cup. And for any young listeners out there who are very regimented in their styles, maybe
lighten up
a little bit.
Lighten up, Francis. All right, man. Listen, another good show. Another good second cup of coffee.
Sir.
I needed like 3 or 4 cups of coffee just to keep up with Randy, but that's all another story. So
there you go.
Yeah, you know what we have to do is we have to get him back, depending on what happened. It doesn't matter, right? St. Bonnie's, Canisius. Just have him come back and we can talk.
No, I think we just get him back because, you know, there's, like we said, there's a lot of things that we weren't able to touch upon. Like, you know, his experiences with Team Canada alone, you know, being the head coach and, you know, winning the World Games, runner up in the World Games. Also, some of the stuff that they've gone through, you know, with their federation, I think has been really intriguing and some growing pains for sure. insurance wise. Very, very interesting. So, yeah, love to have him back on.
All right, man. Bear, have a good weekend.
All right, brother.
We'll talk to you.
You as well.